The following is a part of the Radio Memphis On Demand service. It originally aired live on Radio Memphis and has been edited for time.
That's Tim Hulsman for you right here on Radio Memphis. You're tuned into Radio Memphis Around the World with me, Dee, and we're going to have a fantastic time with that. I tell you what, if you guys don't know anything about Tim Hulsman is a former Artist of the Month for us right here on Radio Memphis Around the World. And of course, you know, they're from, you know, all the way down from Australia, album Get Love. Make sure that you go check it out, timhulsman.com. You know, he's one of those guys that wound up really kind of getting a start with all of his music. He did that. He does that lap steel guitar thing, all right? And I tell you, if you see him and you see the videos and everything else, it is a fantastic sight and stuff. And so that's actually one that I've been kind of trying to watch and trying to kind of follow on that end. But speaking of watching and speaking of following and speaking of Impossible Road, we are getting ready to do a Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series alert for you right here during Radio Memphis Around the World. And of course, this is when we actually get to bring more insight to the table for all of your artists and our entertainers and stuff by sitting down with some of the industry pros from behind the scenes, you know, and think about, you know, that a cool record that you just purchased. Think about that cool concert that you just went to or that live event that you thought was fantastic and you wanted to know how all of that happened. Well, we're talking to a lot of the guys that are behind the scenes. And what's even more beautiful is that, you know, if you guys have been really kind of following all the crazy cool things that we've been doing with this, not only have we been talking to some of the guys and some of the girls behind the scenes that are doing this, we've been getting fantastic stories. We've been having a lot of fun. We've been cutting up and we're actually bringing kind of the human nature to it, if you will. You know, and for today is a very, very special one, you know, that was actually laid in my lap, and I couldn't be more thrilled, you know, being able to do the one that I'm doing today. You know, you guys may have heard of a company called Delicate Productions Incorporated. Okay. This particular company has been around for a better part of 37 plus years. All right. Offices based out of LA, offices based out of San Francisco, California. All right. And they're all about delivering exceptional audio, lighting, and video production services for concert tours, festivals, movie premiere parties, product release, you know, deals, trade show exhibits. They do business meetings, interactive sports, corporate theaters, special events, and they do this through all the venues in the U.S. and Canada. Now, with that being said, of course, you know, they actually offer technical packages with project coordination. They do expert technical services, you know, state-of-the-art audio, lighting, video equipment systems, all that, you know, full deal, one-stop shop. And, okay, one of the things, though, is that this company was actually founded in 1980, okay, by industry vets Smoother Smythe, Stephen Dabbs, Spy Matthews, Gus Thompson, and of course, you know, this was actually initially was actually done in order to do some corporate shows and actually do some entertainment and some sporting industries, and they wound up, you know, doing full service multimedia stuff in 96. What you may not know, though, is how this company really came about, is that when the British band Supertramp stopped touring in 1980, all right, the band started a joint venture with their faithful road crew. That's right, under the name Delicate Productions. Now, following the model of what The Who and the Rolling Stones had done, the company, you know, what they did was the new company rented the band's touring lights, sound, and staging equipment to other touring acts, and a company, you know, pretty much came out of the gate, you know, and pretty much did a ton of different things, all right? You know, anything from, you know, pretty much, you know, doing, and actually, they started the year when they got started with full production for Tool, PJ Harvey. They did for Lights and Sound. They also did video for four stages of the Bottle Rock Festival, corporate production for Patagonia. They did LED set pieces for the ESPN drone games in Europe, video support for LA Rams, you know, training camp. And with addition of video services in 98, they developed one of the most successful production companies and becoming really ultimately the one-stop shop. Now, reel this all back in. Smoother Smythe, a lot of people, that's what they fondly know him as. CFO Chris Smoother Smythe, all right, him being quite the charming Englishman that I have so come to learn and love. He pretty much, you know, had a deal, all right, and works into this whole craziness, including things like leaving, you know, the Royal Air Force to begin a crazy cool career in the music business. How he comes into the fold and how he winds up on that camp, you know, to start this company and everything that happens beforehand is insanely crazy, humorous, funny, and very imperative as far as I'm concerned. And what's even cooler is that I have Smoother on the phone with me right now. Hi, honey. Hey, Smoother, how are you?
Good, but we're glitching out a little bit.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah, let's see how we go. Yeah, I hear you good.
It is. Thank you so much for stopping down and taking some time with me on air.
Well, I'm a little bit flattered I got your introduction there, and I guess there's nothing much more to say, huh?
No, stop. Actually, honey, I cut it in half. There's a lot of stuff. I could have told them that, you know, you got started in doing tours in the 70s with Rolling Stones and Leo Sayer and Olivia Newton-John.
Go back to the beginning. if I can say it.
I love it. I love it. I would love to go back to the beginning.
Here's what I love, right?
Okay.
One thing that was instrumental in who and what I do today was pirate radio.
Love it.
For me, it was out in the North Sea. There were the pirate radio ships, which offered us nonstop music, because in the early to mid 60s in England, pretty much everything you heard on the radio was a cover band, which was dictated by the Musicians Union.
Wow.
So when we realized there were these pirate ships out there cranking out nonstop music instead of cover songs, you know, everybody was trying to tune into them. I left school and I went to join the Royal Air Force, and I was fortunate enough to be in communications and have some of the best radio receivers in the world. So on my night shift, I would sit and listen to the pirate radio all night, and I became a huge fan of the Summer of Love, the West Coast music thing.
Love it.
Which nobody in England, well, very few were aware of. We're talking about The Love, The Doors, you know, Jefferson Airplane.
Love it.
Country Joe and the Fish. And that, for me, just said it all. I had to get out of the Air Force. I had to be able to get down to London and check these bands out. That's exactly what I did. And pirate radio, reaching out there, fascinating. It was never like that in the early mid-60s.
I appreciate that you said that, because, you know, Smoother, when you and I, you know, got to catch up and got to meet each other on the phone, you know, and I told you that Radio Memphis, when we got started, was a nod to Radio Caroline. And Radio Caroline is you know, there's the pirate radio that you're talking about.
That's exactly right.
That is exactly right. And what was so beautiful is that you did share with me that, and it gave me kind of a sense of a chill, because I feel like something's kind of come full circle, you know, and you just described what that type of programming, how it affected you, that you quit the Royal Air Force and you went to go be in a, you know, you went to go hang out with rock music. That's huge.
Exactly right. Right at that time when I was moved to London, it was like the Stones doing their free concert in Hyde Park. It was obviously a great time, because we're talking about 67, 68, onward 69. We've into Led Zeppelin and the like. It was an exciting time. I was actually working for Pan American at the time, and the guy who was sharing a place with me was a drummer with a band that was kind of no name band, but they had a release in the US, and he told me that they were number like 19 in the Billboard Top 100.
Okay,
and they were going to America.
Oh, okay.
And I asked him, I said, who's going to be your road crew? And he told me, you know, one guy. And I said, who's your drum roadie? He said, oh, they won't spring the money for that. They're going to pick somebody up in New York. And I said, well, how about me? And he said, okay. And so I got my cheap ticket from Pan American, handed in my notice. And my first gig was Fairleigh Dickinson College in New Jersey. and we're open for Blur's to cult.
Stop, Smoother, because this is where you had me in stitches. For those of you that have tuned in, we're in the middle of a Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series alert interview brought to you by Ken Barr Films and Radio Memphis. This is the part where you're like, every everything from here on out, I get so tickled and my stomach starts hurting because I start laughing because you start everything with, I didn't know what I was doing, and this is where I show up. And the places that you show up are completely insane. So you decide that you're going to quit. You know, the label was not going to spring money for this kid to have his road crew. So you literally bought your own, you know, from what I understand, you bought your own plane ticket so that you could get to the States, just so you could be a part of this. Is that right?
Absolutely. Of course, I thought it was just a temporary thing. I had no idea where it was actually going to go. And I'll tell you just a quick one. We glitched a couple of times earlier there and dropped out. So if I lose you or you lose me, I'll be standing by for a return call, okay?
Not a problem. I got you.
So here we go. Next thing, I'm in the U.S., two in the U.S. I got back to rainy England. And picked up work there. I was actually in the Marquee Club on Wardour Street, and guy comes up to me and says, "You're a roadie, right? You're looking for work?" I said, "Yeah." And the next thing is, I'm doing a tour of Genesis in 1973.
See, that's crazy.
That's with Peter Gabriel and the whole shebang. So
that's crazy. And did
yeah.
Smoother.
And, again, didn't know what I was doing.
Okay.
Toured Europe with them, and pretty much I was just setting up drum kit for Phil. There was a little half a kit that we set up for Peter, and a lot of junk, you know, draperies and scaffolding, and it was more labor than it was a skill.
Well, see, but that's the thing.
Next thing is, I think I was working for a guy, Leo Sayer. He got hits and went over to the U.S. and we toured the U.S. I actually remember playing Lafayette's in Memphis there. We'd do a one-week stretch in clubs.
Wow.
I got to see a good part of America.
Wow.
Get back to England, you know, again, rainy old England.
Oh.
And I just loved America, to be honest with you. It offered so much. In fact, on my tours of the U.S., I was getting per diem. When I was back in England, I got nothing. And per diem ended up being double what my salary was in England. So,
wow.
People say, was it sex, drugs, or rock and roll brought you over to America? Man, it was per diem.
It was the per diem.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, Smoother, let me ask you a question. You're so funny because you're like, I didn't know what I was doing. Did you really not?
I had no musical inclination, you know. I joined the RAF and I learned Morse code, you know. If I'd have learned the piano, I might have got into things a little quicker and had a better idea what was going on. I asked every bit of the way, from asking the drummer where does this cymbal go, where does this go, what makes you comfortable, and then the guitar thing. You know, and the words of wisdom, well, there's an in and an out, you know, it goes in somewhere, it comes out somewhere. And there's always people around to ask. We didn't have Google. We didn't have all these apps that you can source and find answers for.
Right.
We didn't have cell phones. You had to ask somebody. And there was always somebody who knew more than you. And I learned a lot from that. With Leo Sayer, he had a keyboard player, Chris Stainton, who was with Mad Dogs and Englishmen, and then he went to work with Leo Sayer,
right.
Currently working for Clapton.
Right.
Smashing guy. I didn't know what a B3 organ was. I didn't know what a Leslie Clarinet was. This was like the Apollo mission to me, looking at this stuff. And I just asked him. I said, I went in the dressing room, and, you know, can you come and help me? I've got this thing buzzing. And the guy was super keen to help. You know, you ask, you don't try and don't bluff it. It won't get you anywhere.
Right.
And so it was a huge learning curve. It just kept going on that way. When I was touring Australia with Leo Sayer, he wasn't happy with his monitors and his monitor mix, and I knew what he wanted. So I kind of worked the console till he said, yeah, that's it. And the next thing is, I'm the monitor engineer. And here we go, audio. I know nothing.
I just stop it, Smoother. I'm sorry. Everything is, I know nothing. How do you not know nothing and they pick you to do it?
Oh, I think it's a personality thing. I gotta believe that. I think it's being truthful. When I was working with different bands and I'm mixing monitors, and I made sure on the sound check, I was out on the stage standing next to them listening to what they were listening to. And I was in the environment, the musical environment that they were in. It's no good standing at the side of the stage, you know, figuring that everything's fine. You ask, or you make yourself available to them, and they'll let you know if they need something. And so that a caring approach goes a long way. And nowadays it's incredibly sophisticated with the in-ear monitors and such. Like on recent concerts, we've been dialing out 84 monitor mixes plus.
Wow.
It's just we don't need to go there, but when I was doing it, there was basic simplicity and an industry evolving, so I was able to learn with the growth of the industry, with the technology.
Right.
I was just a little bit behind the curve. I was never on that. I was never on top of it.
you showed up at the right place at the right time, though, and that's the thing. That's part of it, you know, being there at the right place.
Again, we were glitching there.
Oh, that's okay. I said you showed up at the right place at the right time.
I could have been. It'd been nice if I'd turned up 2 years earlier. because that's kind of how I felt things were. Things, you know, the industry evolved so quickly. I kind of wanted to get a couple of messages across today to people who may have an inkling to get into the, we'll call it, music business.
Okay.
And I got to tell you, I think you have to grow into it. You can't back into it. You can't have a girlfriend or wife and kids and decide you want to go on the road and work for a band. It doesn't work that way. If you've already made those commitments, then the road really isn't the place for you, as much as it might be your calling.
Right.
I'm big about, you know, follow your nose. The easiest work you'll ever do will be that which you enjoy. That was always a philosophy with me. Go where you're happy. If you really enjoy it, you got an opportunity to be really good at it.
Yes.
The road, for example, that's not a place for breadheads. If you're looking for money, you've found the wrong place, because it's just too many long hours, too much pressure.
And
there's a lot of pressure out there.
There's a ton of pressure. There's a huge
you know,
amount.
I look back and I was saying to you, you know, we didn't have Google back when I was on the road.
Right.
We didn't have cell phones when I started Delicate Productions.
Hmm.
I ran it from a cell phone backstage. And I didn't have a credit card, and I didn't have FedEx to support me out there.
Wow.
So there were pressure then, but there's still a lot of pressure now, because the show must go on, da-di-da.
Yes.
You got an audience there, and if something's screwed up, whether it's audio, lighting, video, backline, you got to move fast, because it's critical.
It is very critical.
Yeah, a lot of people don't see that. They think it's just, you know, the curtain opens and away we go, because it always works.
Mm-mm. That's why I'm talking to you, so that we understand why it always works. But I tell you, Smoother, what I'm going to do is I need to play a commercial, okay? And I'm going to play a song. So I'm going to put you on hold, and I'm going to bring you back. When I bring you back, I want to talk about how Delicate came about, okay? So, yes, no problem. Hold tight. Don't go anywhere, okay, honey?
Thank you so much.
No problem. That's Bruce Sedano for you right here on Radio Memphis. You're tuning into Radio Memphis Around the World with me, D. It Ain't Cool. And that is off his album, 21st Century World, BruceSedano.com. Go check it out and go grab you one. It is fantastic stuff. But what we need to do is we need to get back to the business at hand, which is a Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series Alert interview right here on Radio Memphis Around the World, brought to you by Ken Barr Films and Radio Memphis. I am in the middle of talking to Mr. Smoother Smythe. That's right. You know, he is a CFO, for Delicate Productions, Incorporated. And what he won't tell you, because he's being so cool about it and he wants to make sure everybody maybe learns a little lesson or two, is that not only on his own personal experiences has he been able to work with some pretty incredible people just by virtue of showing up. Through his company, he's been able to do some amazing events, amazing live corporate shows, amazing live invitations, and including working with artists like Heart, The Pretenders, Dire Straits, In Excess, Jeff Beck, Stevie Ray Vaughan, The Bangles, Lyle Lovett, Rat, U2, Men at Work, Spandau Ballet, Beach Boys, and it continues on and on, including continuing relationships with the band Tool and Foo Fighters. So I'm going to bring Smoother back on the phone with me. Hey, Smoother.
Hi there, hon. we're breaking up a little bit here on this end, but let's go for it.
It's good. We're good. I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it cuts out every now and then, but let's keep pressing off. Hey, it's like being on the road, isn't it?
It is like, it is. I don't know, man, if I were on the road with you, Smoother, yeah, I would probably have a fantastic time. You're too much fun. You would get, you would get me in trouble. I think you would get me in trouble.
Well, there's a great danger of that. Well, there was, but not so much anymore. We won't go there.
Before we took the break, we were talking about, you made the comment on how when you started Delicate Productions, how you didn't have, cell phones and you didn't have things, to make, make things go around. And so I thought this would be a good time to talk about how Delicate Productions got started. Hey, Smoother.
You cut out again there. But I can roll into the little bit of the beginnings of Delicate Productions, if you like.
Yes, I would.
Okay, well, what I'd basically been doing, Di, was working tours, and I'd gone into the audio end of things, and I was pretty much the monitor engineer, and I kind of developed a bit of a skill set there. And when Supertramp, it actually was 1979, Breakfast in America, and it hit big. And they were in arenas, and they bought their own arena sound system, but they were struggling with efficiency. The production manager called upon me to come out and work with them on their payroll and assist their guys in meeting the show criteria.
Right.
So I wasn't exactly welcome, I was a new boy, because these guys had worked with the band since the early 70s. But very, very quickly we were up to speed, and we had the Union Crews working, and everything went well, and it was a phenomenal tour, a global tour. They owned their audio, they owned half of their lighting rig, and after the tour, they were set as, let's say they were millionaires. I mean, things went well. They were going to take a hiatus for a few years, and I was horrified, because I looked at the audio system and the lighting, and it was criminal that they'd put it in a warehouse and rock it away.
Wow.
So I suggested to the band that they, my former production company, the road crew would be partners, and basically the band would not have to pay retainers. It was a happy arrangement, and in January of 1980, we unloaded the containers from Europe. I was actually in the old Wonderlow factory in Beverly Hills, right in the middle of Beverly Hills.
Wow, that's awesome.
Address was 333 Foothill Boulevard, Beverly Hills. Of course, that building has been razed, and it is actually a Google building. and off we went. And after about a month, the manager called me over to the Supertramp office in Burbank and said, "This is from the band. Good luck." And it was $40,000.
Oh, wow.
And back then, I got to tell you, that was just a phenomenal amount of money.
Wow.
And it helped get us off the ground. Do you want to hear about my first band?
I love, honey, I want to hear it all. I'm just tell me all.
Supertramp roadies, right? You know, imagine long hair and the whole thing.
Of course.
The first call I get is to do some dates for the Clash, some West Coast dates. So off we go. And It went well. It was an eye-opener because it was a little bit different music culture to what we were accustomed to. But after the last show, Joe Strummer comes up to me and he says, "Not bad for a bunch of hippies." I thought that was terrific.
You done your job.
He couldn't have given us a great accolade than that.
Perfect.
That was one, the Knack. I don't know if you remember the Knack. They went out.
My Sharona.
Yes.
Some
members went on to be Crowded House.
Yes.
But it was a whole mix, you know. I remember PIL with John Lydon. But the breakthrough, I think, was what the production manager for Supertramp called me from Australia and said, "I want in," because not all the guys decided they wanted in on the production company. And he said, as a sort of catch-up, I'd like to bring Little River Band with me. And I said, sure. So they started a great relationship with the Little River Band, audio and lighting.
Wow.
And then there became an Aussie connection, Australian connection, because the next thing, that's when Split Enz called us. I was at my office, and my secretary said, "There's a band at the door. Their name is Inks." And, of course, that was in excess.
And you were like, "Who is this?" Right.
They were opening for Adamant down in Long Beach, but they realized that their backline gear was 220 volts, and they needed a transformer. So I sent secretary down to the liquor store for a case of Foster's, and that was the beginning of a massive relationship. We sat on road cases, and we just finished off the case, and in excess broke, and they were a huge part of Delicate success.
Oh, wow.
And that cultivated Midnight Oil, Men at Work, you know, a whole plethora of Aussie acts.
Right.
And they were wonderful days. I think U2 came by about 83. I was actually out on that tour as the setting up PA.
Oh, wow.
That was fun. And I guess Love and Rockets, Pretenders. It took off. The company took off. It was small beginnings.
Yes.
We had the inventory. I think the first feeling of true success for me, I think, was 1985. And we were out with Dire Straits doing the Brothers in Arms tour.
Huge.
It was my kind of music. It was great engineers. Everything came together, and for me, that was a huge milestone as far as Delicate Productions goes.
Wow. You know, Smoother, let me ask you, when you look back and you see all of these bands that you were able to work with and realize that a lot of them made a big mark in music history, you know, how does that make you feel?
You move on fast in this business, you know. You live it at the moment, but it's hard to reflect. You hear the record, you look at the platinum album on the wall, but it you've moved on a little bit, you know. I think I remember my kids' birthdays by tours and certain dates.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, it's like Dire Straits. I go, oh, my son Spencer was born. they come and they go, and that you can't hang on to it. You have to move on. And it's kind of fun in a way because, you know, after all these years, it's nice to be out there. You mentioned Tool. I'm thrilled right now because we're working with the Killers.
Yes.
I was looking today at what's on the road, what we're doing, and we've got Manilow and Manson, Barry Manilow out there, Manson, and it's like, that's pretty diverse, isn't it?
It is pretty diverse. That's two completely different worlds.
I remember in the early 90s, I'd be at a Yanni rehearsal, and then I'd have to go over to, say, Tool or White Zombie or something, Rob Zombie, and I'd have to change clothes, you know, because it was hard to play the middle and be in a concert crowd as such, and that diversity has continued on, and it makes it fun because variety is the spice of life.
Yes. Yes. You would know this. You would know this because look at what all you have done up until this point, you know, all of this craziness, you know, Smoother, that you've gotten into. And I still have a funny thing about you jumping in and just learning as you go. And, you know, look at the crazy production. Look at the crazy stuff that you've got all put together around you, you know?
It's simple. When you hit a certain plateau and you say you've got the business running, all right, you don't ask like you used to ask. You just hire somebody who knows what it is you need doing.
And there's a secret. Perfect secret.
I'm surrounded with people with great talent, you know, and I don't need to know it all as long as they're with me.
So you build a team. You build a big team around you.
Yeah, and without the team, you know, you collapse. So, and with the team, it's commitment from them. It's the table, you know, for one leg on the table is bad, the thing goes over, you know, you rely on the team. So it's so critical. We're only successful for all the people who've contributed over the years.
Yes.
And I have a little different philosophy from corporate America.
Okay.
Corporate America kind of works, in a family tree mode, you know, he's the boss at the top and then there's these guys here and you go down the tree. We work different. We put the logo in the middle and everybody else is in a circle around it and everybody works for the logo and therefore for the success of everybody else. Just commit yourself to doing the best job you can and everybody benefits.
Wow.
It's a kind of hippieism, I guess, that came out of Supertramp.
you were far from hippie.
Everybody on the Breakfast in America tour got $500 a week, and it didn't matter what they did, as long as you gave 100%.
Wow.
It doesn't exactly work nowadays, but the generosity that they showed, that everybody was equal. Everybody had access to dressing rooms. You can drink beer and play darts with the band.
Yep.
But you had to make sure that you were 100% on your game, you know.
Yep.
And it was a wonderful experience for me, and I tried to Model Delicate along those lines until we became, you know, kind of corporate. So,
well, still, you got some cool stuff though that you're doing, you know, and it's you still have a certain, you have a certain way you do it, so it's still you, you know, that
well,
does
we
it.
A, we have a philosophy. Some of our rival, you know, companies have where the carpet starts, you stop. I mean, we don't have that. We're open plan. You know, if I need privacy, I'll close the door. But anybody can walk in and out of offices. It's not, we need that integration.
Right.
It needs to be seamless.
It does.
Hey, what are we going to teach these guys out there who are thinking about moving into the industry and moving up?
What are you going to teach them? What are you thinking?
I think we have to stress, be happy, you know,
yeah?
And follow your nose.
Okay.
Passion first, you know, the money will come later.
Yeah.
I really believe that.
Have you ever had anybody show up on your doorstep that know nothing and said, I want to be a part of it? And you said, okay, I'm going to take you in.
Well, it's difficult because I'm inundated.
What?
And with social media and, you know, the internet,
yes.
You can imagine how many guys there are coming out of audio school and such like, or arts, College of Arts and such, who want to get involved in the business. So it is extremely difficult, and it's what we were doing for a long time was bringing people in, cultivating their skill, but I found that then they move, they're gone, you know. They've moved out of state, circumstances, you know. And it's made it difficult to be a training learning center. I need guys, and I've got a pool of about 150 freelance engineers who we call upon during the course of a year to work on projects.
I gotcha.
It gets a little large, and makes it pretty, you know, a little difficult. Every now and then I'll take an intern from one of the schools because of the high recommendation I'll get.
Right.
But typically they learn their skill and then they're off. You know, it's like they leave the nest.
And
you want to hear.
And no, it's not. It's not, because you figure all this effort and you're like, maybe they'll stay here.
Yeah, it's just circumstances. It's not an animosity or anything of that nature.
And I understand. I understand that.
We got a large pool of freelance engineers because the jobs now are so specific, Diane. You know, you put a video tour out, and there's five job descriptions. They're specialists, I notice now that the backline deal's a bit different. We used to call ourselves drum roadies. He's a drum technician, and a keyboard technician, and so instead of having that broad set of no skill. You know, now one focuses on being very good at one specific area.
Right.
Obviously, if you know keyboards well and you also know guitars, you're going to be more gainfully employed.
Right.
But it does do well now to zero in on a specific job description.
I got you. And Smoother, I'm glad you said that, because I did read something that you said on Front of the House Online. You know, it was magazine. I told you I was stalking you. I told you. See, now you wonder what I read. I told you I would stalk you. Okay, but this is a beautiful. Yeah. This is beautiful. It was really simple. I'm not gonna you know, freak you out. You had made a comment that you know, somebody asked you if Delicate had a specialty, and you said, you know, we're not a lighting company, we're not a video company, we're not an audio company. company, we're a production company, you know. We know, but we know where to go, you know, and we know how to focus, you know. And so what you just said pretty much depicted what message you were laying out there. It was like, you know, knowing what lane to stay in when you're supposed to. And of course, you know, you do have all those tools where you can jump in where you need to, you know.
We're a production company, so we're sort of one call can do it all, but we very much have to play well with the competition. We have to be wanted on the tour. We can't be going out on tour with another lighting vendor. We're providing audio, somebody else is doing lighting and somebody video, and have them hate us because we're competition on certain tours. So we play the middle and we've managed to get great relationships with all of the major vendors.
Well, yeah. But
that's a tricky line right there. And for guys who work for a certain company, they work audio for Joe Brothers, right?
Right.
But G&L Audio wouldn't let them in the door because they work for Joe Brothers, you know.
So it becomes
silly difficult out there for some of the skill sets. As a company, we have to forge a middle ground and become everybody's friend, and yet vie for whatever business is out there.
No, I get it.
And then, you know, we got into the corporate game.
Okay.
And when I say variety is the spice of life, boy.
Right.
You know, for my guys, they can be working out on an arena tour and are on the concrete, and a month later they're doing a Merrill Lynch conference in some mega hotel walking the carpet.
Yes.
And that variety is what keeps them I think on their toes. It's different. I guess we need to put a little asterisk there and say we advocate that variety is indeed the spice of life. sign up there, folks.
You do. You need a T-shirt. You need a T-shirt smoother that says that.
But it's true because it keeps it fresh. And when the guys have been on tour and they figured that they're fatigued from it, they wanted to be in town for a while, I put them on corporate events, and within 6 months of commuting in L.A. traffic, they're ready for the road again.
See? That's the difference. Yeah. There's a certain breed about that. Do you miss being on the road, Smoother?
Not one bit. But I love, you know, every the flashbacks that I have from it, and the fact that I don't want to go off tangent here, but I've discovered America. I've been pretty much into every city, every club or arena, I behaved myself to a degree because I was a beer freak and I just wanted to sit and have a beer with the locals.
Of course.
That was my day off, you know.
Of course.
So I didn't particularly indulge, you know, where others did. I wanted to get out there and lift the pint with the locals. And it's given me great insight into how this country works and how it thinks, even in these turbulent political times, Diane.
Wow. You know, but you have this, you know, Smoother, and for those of you who've been tuned in, we've been in the middle of a Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series alert interview right here, and talking to Smoother Smythe, CFO for Delicate Productions Incorporated. You have a very funny and a fantastic way that you look at life. You know, you told me that, you know, you were going to be happy, you know, and if you weren't going to bring, you know, stress home, and, you know, if you weren't going to be happy, you know, why were you going to do this? And it was very poignant the way you put it to me.
Well, yeah, and I firmly stand by that.
You know, and there's a thing about that, you know, with you. And so for you to sit down, and I love the stories. I love the stories about you, you know, meeting the locals and sitting down and getting into everybody's culture. You know, there's something to be said for that as a person, you know, and bring it back to what you do for a living. You know what I mean?
I think I'll tell you what it is. It made me a better people person. and that's a skill set in itself. If one's in the industry, whether you're in a recording studio or wherever you are, television or whatever, have that personality where people are drawn to you and want to be with you, and indulge in their in what who they are and what they're doing. Build up some camaraderie, friendship. Don't be a moaner. Nobody wants a moaner. They'll distance themselves from you.
Of course.
And think, hey, it's a skill set everywhere, isn't it? Without a doubt. Yeah.
Honey, do you have any big plans, you know, for yourself, or big plans for Delicate that people may not know about?
No, I think that I'm not a breadhead. I love what I'm doing. I'm happy to go into the office. I'm sort of semi-retired. I'm 9 to 5, so I leave home at 9 and I'm back by 5, you know.
Perfect.
And I can work on the internet. I can be in Ascension Bay down off of Belize or whatever and still find internet. So I can monitor things from around the globe. I've sort of molded the business, or my commitment to the business, around my current lifestyle, which I'm fortunate to be able to do.
You are.
But hey, strive, work hard, you know, and good things happen. That's the bottom line, isn't it?
It is. Do you have a favorite concert? Do you have a favorite time? A favorite concert that you'll always remember that'll be your favorite?
You're funny. I'll give you two examples, all right?
Okay.
In the late... Shoot, let me get this right. I know when it was. It was 1970.
Okay.
A friend of mine and I decided we needed to be more diverse in our musical appreciation. So we decided to get into jazz. And every Wednesday we'd go to a club called Ronnie Scott's on Fifth Street in the West End.
Okay.
And listen to a jazz act. And we it didn't matter who it was. That we were forcing it on us.
Okay.
So we get there and it's Eric Burden and Raw.
Okay? Oh, wow. Okay.
And you know, Spill the Wine, Take That Girl, and this concert's phenomenal. And Eric says, come on up, Jimmy. And Jimi Hendrix is behind us. This is a little coffee bar type jazz place. And Jimi Hendrix comes up onto the stage, you know, with backwards guitar, and does a number with the band War. Eric sits down on a little table next to us. And it was the most phenomenal, phenomenal set.
Oh, my God.
I remember Eric kicked the table over with a lamp on it. He just couldn't get... It was too much. It was just unbelievable how energetic and spontaneous this was.
Holy
smokes. This was on a Wednesday, Di. This was on a Wednesday evening.
Oh, wow.
On Friday morning, I read the paper. Jimi Hendrix dead. I caught his last performance.
Oh,
it blew my mind.
Oh, you and were there for it. Oh, wow.
I know you've only got so much time, so I'm going to roll right into another one that just comes to mind.
I'll make time for you, baby.
So I'm working with Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jigs.
Yeah.
Probably 1976 or something.
Yeah.
And Steve Van Zandt is in the band. So it's Southside Johnny, the Asbury Jigs, Miami Van Zandt, the Miami Horns, and Ronnie Spector. And so we're doing this tour, and it's like large clubs, and it's fun. You know, I have to be at the Stone Pony to catch the bus for the tour. The bus leaves when the bar closes, and when the tour finishes, they drop you off at the Stone Pony in Asbury Park, and you find your way home. Doesn't matter where you live, it's your problem.
Okay.
And we're just winding down the tour, and we're going to play Red Bank, New Jersey for 2 nights at the theater there. But Southside Johnny is sick. So a local guy there, Bruce, says, "Oh, you'll fill in." Oh, okay. Well, I'm working the audio on, and monitors and such. But he turns up with the E Street Band to integrate with
this
plethora of musicians that I've already got.
You're kidding.
And performs for two nights in right there in Red Bank, New Jersey.
Oh, and my goodness.
They almost had to call out the state troopers because the word got out, especially for the second night. And it was an incredible show, because these guys all played with each other. They all knew all these songs. And they never stopped. And I was out of money to speaker cabinet, so I was trying to get three guys to share one cabinet. I didn't have enough money to mix it for this entourage. But the energy and the fans, hey, I got to tell you, that was special. These weren't big extravaganzas, you know?
No, it's not, and that's what I'm talking about. That's awesome.
When it came together, euphoria.
that's historical. That's crazy. Yeah, that's crazy moment. You. That's crazy moments right there. You know, and how beautiful. And this just blows up in front of you, and you're like, "Holy smokes! What is this? What am I going to do?"
It was, and as chaotic as the Red Bank, New Jersey event was, I'd say Yeah, I was able to suck it up and enjoy it, and I can still reflect on it. You know, I touched on the Dire Straits shows. They were incredible because the audio was supreme. Everybody in those arenas just was, you know, immersed in it. There were times when In Excess hit a plateau and you realized what talent and dynamics. There's many reflections. I think almost every artist has a charisma and something there that's unique that makes them so special. And if you can soak up that moment, so much the better.
I think so. You know what I learned about you, Smoother? I learned in the very beginning what made you tick.
Well, thank you for that.
No, I did.
I still see myself as still a bit of the old John Rady, to be honest with you. I'm not one for, I shouldn't be saying it, but for titles and such like. Open plan. I'm so glad that some of these, you call them Silicon Valley companies, have come out with this open plan office and Disney used to be a place where you had dress codes and you could never work at Disney and wear shorts.
Right.
And that irritated the heck out of me. and so when I see now the way the culture's changing there, and so it should. It's been a long time coming, and it's going to take, and it's never going to completely turn over, is it? You still got those damn Wall Street mavericks and wannabes.
You are killing me. You are absolutely killing me, honey. Smoother, I want to thank you for spending some time with me. And I want to tell you, this won't be the last time that I get you on here. You've got way too much in your head. You got too many stories. We didn't even touch base.
I tell you, okay, you're right, I do. You save them, right?
You've got more. I know you've got too much.
Make an asterisk. So I'll probably tell you one about, let's have a look. Patti Smith would be one.
See?
Yeah, there's quite a few when I think back.
See?
And probably the best one ever. I don't know if you remember a band, Angel.
Oh, my God, stop it. You were there? You were with them?
Yes. I got an album credit somewhere. I did 2 years with Kiss, and then within those 2 years, I also was out with Angel, who were also on Casablanca Records.
Yes, Gene Simmons found them, and they were supposed to be kind of like the antithesis of Chris, yes, or Kiss, yes.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, but they have the magic tricks. And magic tricks don't always go well, and I refer to Spinal Tap for that one. So put an asterisk next to Angel if you care to.
Angel wore all white, and
I'm going to give you a quick one, but I'm only going to give you one short one, okay?
You're teasing me now. Okay, yeah, all right,
now
I'll take
give
it.
Give you a short one, all right?
Okay,
bear with me. Hammond, Indiana.
All right.
We're in a theater that hasn't been used for years, all right?
Okay.
And we've managed to squeeze in the whole set and all the contraptions and gags, all right?
Okay.
And we start the show with the pyro. Boom, you know. And nobody realizes that 50-year-old pigeon shit isn't white.
Oh.
And then it comes down from the rafters in this massive, massive cloud. It's very black. And that's how the show started. You have to imagine this. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. 50 years worth of bird crap that was sitting up on all those beams up there, just distended. It was like a dark sheet came down. Spinal Tap can't do that. That happened there was just phenomenal. They were just, I'll last forever. But I'm only touching the tip of the iceberg.
You, I hate you. You are going to do that and you're going to leave me hanging.
Yeah.
Damn you, Smoother.
Continued.
Just damn you, man. That's just, I was trying to be all pro until this moment and you just blew it.
Now, I tell you what, you got all those guys and fans out there just hungering for some music. You know, give them what they need. Feed them tonight. Yeah, go on. Yeah.
Well, listen, again, you and I, we're going to talk again, okay?
All right, catch you on the email and all that good stuff, all right?
We'll talk, baby.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Dad.
Thank you, baby. Bye. Okay. Oh my goodness, he got me. He so got me. I thought we were going to get through that call, and I am in tears. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Smoother Smythe for Delicate Productions Incorporated. He is quite the gem, and you know, to be quite honest, one of the unfortunate things for this afternoon is that he probably really just kind of started getting raring to go with some of his stories, you know, towards that end of that interview. And so that with, you know, with that being said, this can't be the last time that we talk to him here on Radio Memphis. Obviously, we're going to jump in. But one of the things that you have to understand, too, about him is that there's been so many things that he's touched and so many things that he's done. And what point that he kind of missed that I was trying to tell him is that I understood that Pirate Radio, Radio Caroline, you know, is what stoked his interest and got him started. It was his ultimate love for music that got him started on the path. And even though he may not have been, you know, an artist, and he may not have been a guitar player or you know, piano player or singer or whatever, he found a way to kind of be involved and made a complete, absolute, insanely crazy, cool world out of it all. So I've been very fortunate. I am very blessed to have met Smoother Smythe. And again, I promise you guys that are listening and tuned in, for this version and this edition of Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series Alert Interview, that will not be, and it can't be, the last time that you hear from him, all right? All of these moments from the Road Crew Radio Series are brought to you by Ken Barr Films, brought to you by Radio Memphis. We have a lot of fun with that. So you guys, always stay tuned. Always look for the logo. Always look for the announcements and stuff like that to see what we've got coming up next, all right? In the meantime, on the request of Mr. Smoother Smythe himself, I'm going to have to play you guys some more music. So let's go ahead and get into it before we finish up the show today right here. A little Emily Zuzik right for you. How about some Red Handed? Because I feel like that's what I just got caught into. Red Handed. I'm Radio Memphis.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated and originally aired live on Radio Memphis. Any offers or advertisement contained may not still be valid. All rights are reserved, and copyright is held by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more, look for all the RMOD players at radio-memphis.com.